Good to see you.
Let's go live on YouTube.
So I guess that we had a little bit of resolution in Israel.
I guess, but we should definitely talk about that. And also, thanks for joining me, everyone. Charles Moskowitz here with David. David and I have been doing this program on Thursdays live at 1 p.m. We discuss often Judaism and its intersection with politics, with Israel, with culture. So, David, there's a new government in Israel now, headed by Naftali Bennett, who will be in there for 2 years, and then Lapid will be in there for 2 years. It kind of is similar to the National Unity Government in Israel back in the, I think in the 70s, when you had Peres and Shamir share a four-year term, with Peres doing two and then Shamir doing two. And it's one of these kind of compromises where a government was cobbled together and was able to obtain enough votes and enough seats in the Knesset to be in power. So they are in place now. Israel also has a new president. What do you see the situation as it stands now, and what do you think we should expect there?
Well, I mean, the biggest difference, obviously, is Bennett only having 5% of the vote. I think, you know, the coalition government then, the prime minister, there's no comparison ever that someone could be prime minister with only 5% of the vote. And it was, you know, obviously because of the vast pressure to get rid of Netanyahu, that's such a possibility. But I don't know, we could look it up, but you know, how many seats Shamir or something has, but I think they had at least, you know, 15-20% of the electorate. But no, unfortunately, I'm not so confident. I think that, you see that the most likely thing that's going to happen, and it could be instantly, could even be today. There's already problems coming today that we'll talk about with the votes that have came across the Knesset, that everyone, that the polls, 80% of Israelis, maybe even 90%, predict that this government is going to collapse. And then we're going to be in the same situation we were before, but it's not going to be Netanyahu. It's going to be Naftali Bennett. And honestly, I think it's going to be a disaster. You know, we talked about how he did in Lebanon. And I was just telling you, like, besides, like, you know, the UN and International Court and Palestinians, that even Israel said that, like, this guy was a loose cannon. This guy, you know, was out of control. And that was the Israeli report. And now he's our prime minister. I'm not an Israeli citizen, but people that really care and follow about Israel. And the most likely thing is the government is going to collapse, and we're going to be in the same situation with perpetual Bennett. And maybe they'll be able to eke out a budget before the government collapses. But I would not be surprised if the government collapses before they could even eke out a budget. And you know, maybe Israel could survive, you know, like going on like this. I mean, you talk to Mordechai Kadar, and our visions for Israel as American citizens basically include, I mean, we call it like the destruction, but the dismantling of the way the Israeli government is currently set up. So, I mean, even Charles, we have disagreements about what we would like to see in Israel. But I think both of us largely agree that the current system probably has to be dismantled, and they need some sort of constitutional convention and new structure, government, if it's Emirate or whatever system. But that's not on the table. That's just like people like me and Charles, and even in Israel, people like Professor Kadar are a vast minority. And unfortunately, likely the only thing that will unify Israel again will be, you know, some sort of military threat. So I gotta admit, I'm pretty, I wouldn't use the word scared, but I'm worried. I'm pessimistic.
You know, I don't really know the politics of Israel deeply. I mean, I should say that up front here. I've interviewed people over the years, including recently Mordechai Kadar, And my sense is that the government is going to go forward and it'll be fine. And I think he will be prime minister for 2 years, and that Lapid will be prime minister for 2 years, just like the Perez Shamir arrangement. That, you know, there's a way of by which people's pasts can be forgiven once they're in power. You know, I'm not saying forgiven, but, you know, there are various dynamics that take place where people want someone to be in power and what they represent regardless. I mean, we could look at, for example, Biden. I mean, look, the guy who has a racist, segregationist past where he's used the N-word constantly and made vicious anti-Black speeches in Congress and was, you know, and yet that's overlooked because the establishment and segments of them want him to be president, so they're willing to paper it over. And I think that the same
way no one wanted Bennett, you know, it was some sort of anomaly exception that was completely different from Shamir. Like, Bennett is extremely unpopular. He didn't even make it into the Knesset the last election, and this time he only got 5%. And I told you the polls, only 11% of Israelis think that the coalition, you think that this coalition is going to last 2 years.
Yes.
Only 11% of Israelis agree with you. And just today, like all it takes is the Arab Party or any of these groups to back out, and there's going to be new elections. And that could be this week. You know, if the Arab Party backs out, they'll have to call new elections next week, and then it will be perpetual prime minister.
And I think that they want to have some consistency. They want to have some sense of cohesion. You know, they were able to get rid of Netanyahu. I think most people in Israel, quite honestly, were tired of him, regardless of the fact that I think he was a very successful prime minister. But, you know, he's been in power off and on for 30 years. And I think that there is this desire to do something different and move forward. It's a zeitgeist. Again, in situations like that, often nuances of a person's past and whatnot are just overlooked, let's put it that way.
He's one of the most unlike politicians in all of Israel. He only got 5% of the vote.
Fine, but the point is he's there.
And not like Shamir or Lapid, that's very popular, at least among
hundreds
of thousands of Israelis. Tens of thousands of Israelis that like popular. Bennett.
But the difference is that it's not about him. It's that the way politics works as such, the people of Israel want to have some sense of stability and cohesion. I don't think they want to go through another election, given the fact that there's been already four, I think, in the past couple of years. And people want to see some sense of stability. And so I do think that for that reason, it's not because anyone particularly likes him, but it's because they want to see a government move forward. And I think it will move forward. And the fact that he is going to be there for only 2 years is at least somewhat of a safety valve in terms of people willing to go along with it in the interest of national cohesion. Who knows? We'll have to see what happens. But that's my sense of it. Unless he does really steps in it and does something so ridiculous or outrageous. And I don't think that's going to happen. The coalition is between Bennett and the more left party than generally, which is Lapid, and they have the promise of getting in there in 2 years, which I think they value, and the Arab Party, which is their ally. So I think that
I'll tell you today's news when you're ready and why the coalition might collapse today, and it's related to something that we've talked about on the show before, the family reunification law that bans Palestinians and infiltrators who marry Israelis from earning Israeli citizenship. That currently there's a law in Israel called the Family Reunification Law that if you're a Palestinian and you marry an Israeli, which generally is a path to citizenship, only Palestinians are barred from this path to citizenship. And the Palestinian Ram group has refused to back it. That could lead to a collapse in the coalition.
Let's get some clarity on that law. So let's say you're a Christian and you marry an Israeli, an American Christian.
Only Palestinians are barred from Israeli citizenship. Anybody in the world besides a Palestinian who marries a Jew could get Israeli citizenship.
Without converting to Judaism.
Yeah, just through there's a specific law called the Family Reunification Law that bars that has to be renewed every year, and it needs to be renewed. And the ROM coalition said they're not going to vote for it. Okay. And if ROM backed out of the coalition over this, or if the right wing wanted the government to collapse, the government could collapse today and there would be new elections.
And that the right wing
coalition,
I understand.
So if once the coalition collapses, then it's going to be perpetual Bennett.
So then the right wing wants to see this law continue, which is that specifically Palestinians are singled out, not like other groups, not a Christian. If somebody, an Israeli marries a Christian or a European or a Frenchman or a German, that person automatically becomes a citizen of Israel if they emigrate to Israel.
Was eligible, not necessarily automatic. Yeah, but okay. In Palestinians, it's forbidden.
Whereas if you're a Palestinian and you marry an Israeli, you don't become a citizen. Is that it?
It's impossible to. I mean, it's
the unless law. You convert to Judaism, I suppose.
I told you the law. You can't even convert to Judaism.
Oh, no, that's. I looked into that. That's not a law.
Well, I mean, the family reunification does know that a Palestinian who marries an Israeli and then converts to Judaism is still barred from becoming an Israeli citizen. That's my understanding. You know, it was debated in the Knesset today. You could look it up.
Okay. It's a hot issue. You know, Israel is very careful about.
It could be the right wing wants the government to collapse. Because say like, you know, Lapid, it's Lapid's coalition with the agreement that Bennett is just the first prime minister in a rotation. So the right wing probably wants the government to collapse and would prefer perpetual Bennett in new elections.
No, but they're not going to get Bennett in new elections. He only has 5% popularity.
But it doesn't matter.
Now they have
if they call for new elections, Bennett will be prime minister until a new coalition is formed. And so that, like, just like Netanyahu, there were four elections and they couldn't form a coalition and Netanyahu remained prime minister. So legally, if the coalition falls apart, Bennett will remain.
Yeah, until they form a new coalition.
If the coalition falls apart, they'll call new elections.
Yeah,
until that stops, the most likely scenario is Bennett will be perpetual prime minister.
It doesn't make sense politically. Maybe it'll happen, but they have Bennett in there for 2 years. We're talking about the right. And if the right conspires to destabilize the government or for new elections, Bennett ain't going to be any more popular. And he might get in for another 2-year arrangement. Nothing. They're not going to gain anything. He's not going to win a popular vote if he's as unpopular as you
say. It won't matter. You won't be able to get rid of him besides a new coalition. So Bennett, even though he only had 5% of the vote, through default will become perpetual prime minister till a new coalition through elections
which would have to probably pretty quickly. I mean, right now
he's very unlikely. I mean, you saw how hard it was to get rid of Netanyahu. You think getting rid of
Bennett right now easier? they have him there for 2 years. A new election isn't going to take 2 years. It's going to take probably a few months, and you know, then they'll be back to square one. They'll be lucky if he's in at all.
But then it'll be the same thing, that there is no path forward in Israel, period,
and to a
coalition, and any coalition that will be formed will have to be done in order to get rid of Bennett. So it will be like, you know, anybody but Bibi, it'll become anybody but Bennett, and the coalition will require people that don't agree with each other forming a coalition for the specific purpose of getting rid of Bennett.
They already did that to get rid of Netanyahu. Look, you and I don't know what will happen, but I don't think that, at the end of the day, that makes sense politically for anybody, left, right, or center.
Well, that's why I'm so worried. I mean, you have faith that somehow this coalition government's going to last for 2 years. I told you only 11% of Israelis agree with you.
We'll see. I mean, I don't know which percent, I don't know what poll you're looking at, but I think most Israelis don't want to see another continuation of this instability with constant elections, you know, for the interests of the nation. That's why the Perez Shamir government work, because people were tired of that. I mean, there was some similar dynamic back then. I know that they were both heads of major parties and Bennett isn't, but nevertheless, there was a sense, especially after the assassination of Yitzhak Rabin, that they wanted to have stability so they had a national unity government. I mean, Ben Gurion had a national unity government for a while.
And that's what Professor Kadar is saying. There is no stability. And it's kind of what me and you are agreeing upon. Within the current framework of the Israeli governmental system,
within the parliament,
there is no possibility of
stability.
They need some sort of new constitutional I mean, they don't even have a constitution, but they actually need some sort of, you know, constitutional convention to completely rework the political system. And within the current system, there is no possibility of stability. That's my opinion.
You're talking about they have a parliamentary system modeled after the British parliamentary system.
House instead of two.
Well, that's right. They don't have a House of Lords, but they do have a ceremonial president. I tend to agree that, I mean, in a way, the American system is a better system with a strong president, executive, balanced by two other branches of government and the existence of states. But, you know, it depends. Most countries in the world, I think, have more of a British-style parliamentary system, not just Israel. I mean, that's kind of the standard system in most European countries. And probably,
unfortunately, Israel doesn't have a constitution. Like if it's Jordan or Arab countries that are constitutional monarchy.
But most countries don't have constitutions.
Israel's supposed to have a constitution. Like they did the basic laws, it was under the provision that eventually they would form a constitution, and it never did. So it's like 80 years later, let's make a constitution. But so that's what I'd be proposing and saying, yes, the system that Israel's operating under was supposed to be a temporary system till they developed a constitution, and
most that should countries be the direction. The world, they probably should.
But Israel is calling for like
most countries in the world don't have a constitution. Great Britain doesn't have a constitution. Canada doesn't have
a. I think Israel was supposed to have a when they made the basic laws, and they supposed to be temporary till they could create a constitution, and they never accomplished that. Unfortunately,
all right. Fair enough. What else is new? Michigan with anti-Semitism and with the, we can't talk about the election, of course, but what's going on in the Jewish world?
They actually boycotted the Zim shipping. I think they did in Oakland, California, and New York. So the protest, University of Michigan has pressure, but I don't think there's been.
Are you talking about BDS?
But I was saying there's a company called ZIM. That is Israeli International Shipping. And in Oakland, California, they actually blocked the ports and convinced the union not to unload it. And they had protests in New York that also had such problems. So they just have an office here, and like 75 people went outside and protested for an hour. But like in my area, there hasn't really been noticeable increase in anti-Semitism besides in the universities and the public statements. In terms of the violence, Hashi Titzler, I think he got assaulted by Palestinians. Hopefully you'll be able to have him back. We'll see the city council elections coming up. We'll see, maybe he wins the Democratic nominee and ends up coming on to city council. But like LA, I think violence amongst Jews is increasing in some areas. It hasn't been the case here in Metro Detroit, and I think it's unlikely the dynamics that there would be that kind of violence against Jews in Detroit. So it's more just a question politically. Andy Levin, our local congressman, decided to back Ilhan Omar in her statement. They had the Jewish congressmen that stood up and wanted Ilhan Omar to clarify her statement about comparing Israel to Hamas and ISIS, and Andy Levin agreed with her that these forcing her to clarify is essentially racist and Islamophobia, that even if you disagree with her, this can like force you to clarify, and now he is being stop anti-Semitism. I said, God forbid they're going to call Andy Levin, Carl Levin's son, Senator Levin's nephew, an anti-Semite. Over defending Ilhan Omar, but in terms of that's more political, the $1.2 billion, the $1.2 billion package for Israel, or various things. Andy Levin has a vote, and that vote might make a difference. So there's a lot of pressure about that in universities that have like BDS resolutions, or just the general status of how high can we hold our head as a Jew. But honestly, I'm not that concerned about rising anti-Semitism. As far as I know, I haven't heard of any Jews getting beat up in Metro Detroit. I haven't heard of people's businesses losing their job or various things, and I'm not expecting that.
It tends to come in waves, usually when Israel is in the news in terms of defending itself against in a war, like it did about a month ago, when there's another attempt at genocide in Israel. You get all the vicious haters from both the left and the right, and it's more left than right these days, crawl out from under the woodwork and start to agitate against Israel and against Jews. And then once it's over, they go back underground. And I think that's what's happened. That hasn't changed. I remember that phenomena back in the day. I mean, it is, going back in the 70s, Israel's at war, you get them all come out. And it's the same general unholy coalition between Israel's open enemies like Hamas or an Arab country coalesced with leftists around the world. You do have right now great criticism against your good friend, your congresswoman Tlaib and Omar and the so-called squad.
For Andy Levin from one of the most famous Jewish families, been like 100 years in Michigan. Dominic Carl Levin was one of the most senior ranking senators. His uncle is disagreeing with you, and he's stepping out and publicly defending on Omar and Tlaib.
Why? Does he want to boycott Israel? I mean, is he supporting?
He wants to boycott Israel, but
what does he support them for? Because they're a leftist? I mean,
probably because he supports a multicultural immigrant America and feels that defending against Islamophobia or dark-skinned.
If he supports multicultural America, he might support his own people. I mean, there's nothing that doesn't support.
He is supporting. I'm saying he is voicing the opinion of the majority of Jews in this area. So like you as someone that's interested in advocating for Israel, and Andy Levin is advocating for the Jews who live in his district or the non-Jews who live in his district. And if advocating for Israel goes against that, where his uncle Carl Levin obviously was did more for Israel.
Sure.
I mean, he was the head of, I think, the Ways and Means Committee. What? Most of the money that went through to Israel was done through Carl Levin.
And now the nephew's gone bad.
You're going to say he went bad, but that's your opinion as someone who cares about Israel. So Israel, I think it's more.
People. Yeah.
Now, I'm saying but you're the guy who lost to Barney Frank. Barney Frank also.
Barney Frank was pro-Israel. We didn't disagree on that.
By saying if he was in office today, he would probably be similar.
No, I don't think so. Andy Levin. Barney Frank is the son. No, I disagree.
Well, because he's decades. Because he's decades Frank older. I was saying if he was decades younger.
No, I don't think
he would
so.
Be like Andy Levin.
He would be a Zionist because a lot of people on the left are Levin, and apparently a lot of people.
You didn't see the new Pew survey then. I mean, we didn't talk about, but I mean the demographics.
Let's talk
the polling,
about that. Saying that the most of Jews in Greater Detroit are anti-Israel now. I mean,
they're not anti-Israel. They're just not pro-Israel. They don't care. Andy Levin supports Israel. I'm not saying that they want to be anti-Israel, but they don't really care whether he's pro-Israel or not.
Israel in the de facto
sense. You're going to say not being pro-Israel is being anti-Israel as a rhetoric tool, but it's not that they're anti-Israel. They just
they may not be actively anti-Israel in an overt sense, but if they're supporting a Jew hater and an anti-Israel activist like Tlaib, they're anti-Israel in the de facto sense. Yes.
No, I mean, that's just your rhetoric. Yes. You're saying they're supporting Omar because they feel like maybe people like you are picking on her because she's Muslim and has dark skin. And even if she is anti-Israel,
that's absolutely even if she is anti-Israel, hateful, blood libelous lie.
No, that's what Andy Levin felt as someone who loves, I'm sure Andy Levin loves Israel, but he felt as a Jew, it's more Muslim. Important for him to
they're
stand
picking
up for
on
a Muslim.
Someone because they have a genocidal attitude toward the state of Israel. They want to see every Jewish man, woman, and child in Israel murdered. That's
God forbid. We're saying that's what he's saying. The last
not because thing. She's Muslim. There are plenty of Muslims in this country who do not support her position. I'm sure.
In the current scenario, Andy Levin would stand up to you to protect Ilhan Omar.
And he's protecting a Jew-hating person.
It's your opinion, but he is standing
opinion.
Up to protect her against people like you.
It's not my opinion.
But I mean, you do. Andy Levin is standing up for Ilhan Omar specifically against people like you.
Against me because I'm calling out
specifically people like you. Andy Levin is that's the reason why he's standing up for her.
It has nothing to do with Muslims.
Well, I'm sorry, I know Andy Levin. It's like Andy Levin's standing up to you. The reason he's supporting Ilhan Omar is because he's standing up to people like you.
Because he's a self-hating Jew.
You could claim your reason for his intention, but he's saying, like, no, he feels and like you are unnecessarily picking on her. And as a Jew, like he's stepping up to say he's going to defend her against you.
Yeah, he's going to claim that because I don't goose-step to the left and zig-heil to her points of view, I have something against Muslims or I don't like somebody because of their skin color. That is a vicious goddamn lie. And he is sick if he thinks that.
Okay, that so there's inner Jewish balance where you and Andy Levin are getting in a fight over your opinion about Ilhan Omar's.
My opinion about Ilhan Omar is you're unnecessarily
picking on her, and he's willing to stand up to you.
He stands up for her policies. My opinion against her is because of her policies, not because of her ethnic background.
Irrelevant. I was saying, like, she'll get one vote on whether to give more money to Israel or not, but like, what she thinks about Israel is basically
it's very relevant. Just like
Israel is basically irrelevant. He's going to get one vote in whether to give
It's very Dovid. It's very relevant because she combined with Tlaib and my own congresswoman here in Boston, Ayanna Pressley, and others are basically taking over the Democratic Party. So it is every bit relevant.
Yeah, but it's like most people in this area that are voting these elections don't really care about U.S. policy in Israel. And saying as a U.S. congressperson,
but when it doesn't matter your opinion like,
on Israel. Like, there's only really one vote that they're going to get that's going to make a difference on Israel, and that's going to be the funding. So if Ilhan Omar and your congresswoman vote against funding for Israel, maybe Andy Levin votes for it, maybe he votes against it. Everything else is just a matter of opinion. It really makes no difference to their constituents.
No, if he is supporting a congressperson who wants to cut aid to Israel and one who is combined with others who are likewise of that opinion and who are really taking over to a certain degree, I would argue, the Democratic Party, including the existing administration, then he's supporting the destruction of Israel. And he's, I would argue, a self-hating Jew. It has nothing to do with Omar's ethnic background. I couldn't care less about her ethnic background. And for you to suggest or for him to suggest that I have something against anyone because of that is a vicious lie and a piece of agitprop communist propaganda, I might add. This is and by the way, now that we're on the subject, this whole business of Attorney General Merrick Garland coming out and saying the biggest problem facing this country right now is white supremacy. What is he really saying? He's saying anybody who supported Trump, that's what he's saying. The white supremacy is there. It's always been there. I don't think it's any more now than it's ever been. And it's something that's been condemned by everybody. It's a fringe thing. But for him to trot that out at a time like this and ask people to turn in their relatives if they think they might not have an opinion or something. That's what they did in Nazi Germany. This is vicious, this is ugly, and it's anti-American. It's nothing to do with, there isn't a major, white supremacy is always a problem, but it's way down the list in terms of the real problems this country's facing right now. And it does not describe the most Trump supporters. In fact, I would suggest in a converse way, that the more supremacist attitude is found in the so-called critical race theory, who are focused on this obsessive identification of people based on race and ripping people apart and dividing the country up. That's the problem if you want to take a look at race problems.
So it's interesting.
Not some fringe nuts under a rock somewhere who are part of some weird white supremacist cult. We understand who they are and they should be looked at, but that's not mainstream. That's not suddenly becoming like, he acts like this is some crisis that, needs the whole country needs to mobilize. This is just agitprop. I mean, this is dividing people.
It's interesting dynamics of what's going to happen politically in this area.
How so?
Andy Levin is a congressman in the district right now that's adjacent to where most Jews live. That most Jews, Andy Levin represents not too many Jews. The majority of the Jews live in Haley Stevens' district, who ran against my friend Epstein, who was the coordinator of Trump for Michigan as a Republican. Okay. And the Jewish community in
it tends this to be area, liberal, but it's not.
Let me just Israel. Finish and lay out the politics here. So the Jewish community here in Metro Detroit unequivocally opposed Lena Epstein in favor of Haley Stevens. So, but there's going to be redistricting. Let me finish. I'm explaining something. So there's going to be redistricting because there was elections, and so it looks like they're going to redistrict the districts. And so Andy Levin, should he run again, will be in primary against Haley Stevens and will no longer be representing the area that doesn't have too many Jews and is multicultural Democratic, but he will now have to run directly against Haley Stevens in the area where tens of thousands of Jews in Metro Detroit live. And yes, extremely likely that the organized Jewish community will agree with Charles and will back Haley Stevens over Andy Levin in the Democratic primary over Israel. But currently right now, Andy Levin is in the district where there aren't too many Jews, and no one in his district really cares that much about you know, the issues.
Apparently he does.
He is in a multicultural area. He represents, you know, like the UAE and unions and a lot of African Americans and Arabs. And he probably does politically, it's good for him electorally to stand up for Ilhan Omar and say like these are unfound, unfair attacks. But because of the redistricting in the next election, he will be in a Democratic primary within the Jewish district.
Good.
Whoever wins, that is likely to become the Congress area here, will majority agree with Charles
good. And
will
likely back Haley Stevens. Thanks. I'll do it.
We'll see next year.
Yeah, I hope he tanks.
I mean, they'll be next year, and it's interesting because they're redistricting.
It sounds like Haley, seems-
just like Ilhan Omar. I mean, just like Rashida Tlaib, there's only like 1% of like in Haley Stevens, like 15% of the electorate is Jewish. In Rashida Tlaib's area, like 1% of the electorate, maybe in Andy Levin's 3% of the electorate is Jewish, and so it's going
to
be
redistricting. It's hard to know that interesting. Greater Detroit Jews are not.
I don't know if the same thing is happening in your area also.
I think
I'm sure the demographics
in my area of Boston
is semi similar in your area.
No, I think that it's safe to say that in my area of Boston, just like Greater Detroit, the majority of Jews remain pro-Israel. Even if they're liberal, it doesn't matter. Liberal, conservative, they're pro-Israel. And it sounds to me like Haley Stevens, who's
but Presley's your congresswoman, anyways.
Well, you're saying Presley's your congresswoman. Presley is my congresswoman, but she doesn't. She represent. I mean, I live in the city of Boston. I don't live in the Jewish neighborhood.
What percent of the electorate? You're saying Presley is not the congresswoman of the district that includes the majority of Jews?
Yes,
in the area where you
they
live.
They do not include the majority of Jews. That's right.
And if she was in the area that included the majority of Jews,
she probably would not be elected with her positions.
So that's why the redistricting makes a big deal in this area, and that's why comparing that. I don't know if you're going through redistricting there, and if they redistricting to overlap Presley's area with the major Jewish community than the Jewish, but in the area you live, the Jewish community probably has close to no power within the Democratic primary process to get rid of her, just like here in Michigan, that the Jewish community has basically no power to defeat Tlaib in an election.
That's right. Same dynamic. You're absolutely right, David. And I mean, just again, it sounds to me like, just to reiterate here, the Jewish community of Boston, just like the Jewish community of Detroit, which is liberal, is predominantly, and I would even suggest largely, overwhelmingly pro-Israel. And that it sounds like Haley Stevens, who's not Jewish, is pro-Israel. And
APAC member all the way.
Yeah, and is supported by the Jewish community for that reason, among others. And she's probably liberal too, which is fine. But the point is that this guy, Levin, is not in the mainstream of Judaism. He is siding with anti-Jewish and anti-Israel clique because
my mother was partners at the same law firm. I mean, she's retired, but when Carl Levin retired, he became a partner in Hahnemann.
Yeah, and his uncle
Carl Levin. Good. Carl Levin is about as mainstream Judaism as you could get.
He was a good American.
His son now all of a sudden isn't in the mainstream.
Yeah, I guess not.
I mean, he's from the dying kind of reform conservative movement where it's saying like, no, I mean, he was what was
mainstream. Well, then he obviously went bad at some point because it's not.
I mean, you got to claim he went bad. It's saying that it was the if you follow the Pew survey, it's just the natural trend of people like him that the Democratic
spoiled silver spoon in his mouth, rich.
But you're putting a pejorative on it.
You know,
I don't think it's necessary.
Profile that there were people like AOC. And other people who, yeah, it is a classic profile.
He grew up kind of like white. He probably didn't even tell most of his friends that he was Jewish. He probably, you know, he somewhat integrated, had a lot of African-American friends, things like the union. You know, the Jewish issues were more about supporting the UAE and multiculturalism and integration. The main issues for Carl Levin, he's still following, like the UAE. Integration.
Fine. Well, those issues
policies. It's only Israel that.
Israel, and I also don't think that most African Americans and.
But he's still generally following his family's policy.
I don't think that most African Americans are anti-Israel. I don't think that
he got into office basically off the UAE. That I'm saying reason.
And he's
the reason he won his
fine.
Area was union backing. And African Americans.
I just wonder if his anti-Israel thing is probably not because he thinks it's.
I say he's not anti-Israel. He's just not actively
he's supporting
pro-Israel.
Anti-Israel people who want to cut aid to Israel. That's
he's not supporting. He's just defending against people like you. If me and you were in University of Michigan,
and you were
yelling at some Palestinian kid, and I stood up for the Palestinian kid against you, it doesn't make me anti-Israel.
Get on this merry-go-round with you,
because that's what you're saying. You're insisting that he's anti-Israel because he's standing up for Ilhan Omar. Against people like you attacking them.
Yes, no.
And if they say, like, I'm pro-Israel, but I don't like the way you're talking about Ilhan Omar, and doesn't make me anti-Israel, just makes me not liking the way that you talk about Ilhan Omar.
You know what? I don't want to go back in this merry-go-round with you. We've gone over it. I will do it briefly, and then we're going to change the subject, okay? My opposition to Ilhan Omar is not because of her ethnic background. And he thinks it is. It's a damn lie. It's a blood libel. And it's vicious. It has nothing to do with that. It has to do with her public policies, which are anti-Israel. And that if he thinks criticizing Ilhan Omar is because of her ethnic background, he's demented. It has nothing to do with that. That's an attack on Jews. It has to do with her anti-Jewish and anti-Israel attitudes, period. Nothing to do with her background. And certainly most African-Americans, I would even think a pretty good percentage of Arabs are not anti-Israel, and I don't think that's why he is siding with her. I don't think he's siding
he's
with
not
her.
Anti-Israel.
Anti-Israel, and I don't.
But you're just keep on repeating that, but saying like, no, he's not anti-Israel. He's pro-Israel.
He's de facto anti-Israel if he's siding with them.
No,
and I
it's
think
like, it's saying just
yes,
like that,
he is.
It's like he just is standing up for. He's not standing up for her opinions on Israel. He's standing
he's
up for her being attacked
because of her policies, which are anti-Israel.
We're saying even if you're right about what she thinks about Israel, he's saying, yes, as a Jew, I will stand up for her against you because she has a right to be anti-Israel, even if I'm pro-Israel.
She has a right to be anti-Israel.
And if you attack her, I'm going to defend her.
She has a right to be anti-Israel. Look, if Adolf Hitler was elected in her district, he has a right to serve because he's elected. That doesn't mean I'm going to support them. And he is.
But I mean, he largely agrees with her progressive policies, besides for her positions on Israel.
Has he said anything about
her? He came to power on the unions. He came to power on a progressive platform that is largely in line with.
But has he said anything about her present controversy in Congress about his statements about Israel and his comparing Israel to the Taliban? Has he criticized that? Has he come out publicly and talked about the fact that
Omar
said that
he was going to defend her against
a woman fuzzy? Did he criticize that?
No, and he's in fact
all
he's
right.
defending
he's
her.
He's anti-Israel. Thank you. Let's move
no, I mean,
on.
He's pro-Israel. Why are you saying because he's refusing to attack her?
He's
anti-Israel.
No, he's anti-Israel. Maybe I don't know.
If I walk down the street and I see someone beating up a Palestinian who's an anti-Israeli activist, God forbid, and I stop the person from beating up the Palestinian, does that make me anti-Israel?
No. But if that's saying
is that what he's doing with Ilhan
no,
Omar?
But if you but by supporting his her public policy, it does. He's not. I mean, personally, if she's I don't want a hair in her head damaged. I mean, I would defend her as a person.
But her opinions on Israel mean very little for
and
public policy because on 90% of other issues, he's in the same progressive camp. I mean, they're both basically union-backed candidates.
Yeah, but this one issue, he obviously is a little fuzzy.
But the unions are way more important than Israel.
And there are plenty of other pro-union people who are pro-Israel also. Most of the unions are pro-Israel. I would ask the unions what their position is on this.
Yeah, but just to demand that he turn against Omar because her position on Israel doesn't mean that he agrees with her position on Israel.
He should come out and vigorously condemn her recent.
Why should he do that? You say he's an anti-Semite. He's because anti-Semite otherwise, unless he condemns, unless he, you're an anti-Semite if you don't condemn anti-Semites. I'm sorry.
He is.
Says the man who talks with E. Michael Jones and Richard Spencer. Says the man who talks with Richard Spencer
and Michael Jones. Yeah, and condemn them vigorously. You are saying that he actively supports her and he has endorsed her.
Supports her as a person in being
as a politician. Attacked. He has supported
as a person who has a progressive agenda that is 90% in line with his agenda.
He has supported her as a politician.
Because 90% of their agendas, progressives are the same.
But he has to come out with that 10% and condemn it. Or else.
Why does he have to?
He doesn't have to.
But you're calling upon him as a Jew. You're saying he's a bad Jew unless he does that. Or you say he's anti-Israel unless he does it.
Yes, I am. And if he has any conscience, he would do that because she and her ilk, not just her, but her crowd, her squad, as they call it, are anti-Israel, and they are wielding considerable influence in the Democratic Party. And yeah, he should come out. He can agree with her on other issues. But, you know, I mean, the fact that this is a big
one. She's going to say the same thing. She's going to say, this guy Charles is attacking me. How are we going to work together on the unions and police reform if you don't defend me against Charles?
I don't know what you mean by that, but I just...
If Ilhan Omar says the same logic that you're saying, it's like, you know, these guys, they're calling, you know, they're accusing me of being anti-Semite. You know me. I'm not an anti-Semite. I need you to defend me. So that's what Andy Levin is doing. He's saying Ilhan Omar needs to work together on a various amounts of issue, saying she needs Jews to come out and support her. And so Andy Levin stepped forward and said, I will stand up for Ilhan
Omar. And he should have done it in the context that he does not agree with and condemns her Israel policies. And he didn't do that, did he?
Well, no. I'm saying I'm not, I'm not his daddy. I'm not defending him.
It's a political question. If you're going to support a candidate for office and they take a position that you disagree with, you have to put that out there and make that known that you don't support that particular thing. You don't just goose step along and say, oh, I support this person. And you don't lie and say that anyone that disagrees with me has something.
He could lie. He's saying that Charles is the liar. She is not.
Yeah, that I have something.
That's what he's saying. He's saying he knows the woman and she's not an anti-Semite.
You started the conversation of it by saying that he's defending her because he thinks people have.
He's defending her that he thinks she's not an anti-Semite. He's saying, I know this woman. I'm a Jew. He's from one of the most famous Jewish families in all of America. And he's publicly standing up and saying she's not an anti-Semite.
And you also said that she feels that she's being attacked because of her ethnic background. By Jews, which is a terrible
Islamophobia. That people like you demanding that she clarify is essentially Islamophobia. That's what Levin agreed. That people like you demanding this stuff is basically because she's black and Muslim. And that's what I'm not saying. That's what I agree with. But that's what Andy Levin
is saying that
he is concerned.
Blood libel against
attacking her because she's Muslim and black, and that's why he's standing up to defend her and says, "No, this woman is not an anti-Semite. He knows her."
That's divisive and it's a vicious lie. And she has made her position quite clearly known about Israel and even to a degree about Jews, I may add. And he has, you know, the fact that he's
a Jew and disagrees with him. That's the point of what he's saying. Like he's a Jew from one of the most prominent Jewish families in all of America. And he's standing up and saying Charles is wrong. This woman is no anti-Semite.
He is disgracing the legacy of his own family by not publicly saying, look,
that's up to his father, who thank God is still his uncle, who's still alive. His father passed away.
And what does his uncle say?
I don't know if he's made a comment on it, but
I wonder. I'd like to know.
It'd be interesting if Carl Levin agrees with you that he's disgracing the legacy of his own family.
Yeah, I bet you he doesn't think.
Okay, well, you bet you don't speak on behalf of him. Fine, no, you're saying is it your right to say he's disgracing the legacy of his family, or is it his family's right to stay? If Carl Levin's alive, is it his right to say whether his nephew
is
legacy or is
I'm not going to hold it against him if he doesn't, because we're talking family here, so maybe he doesn't want to. Fine. But I am not related to these people, and I can make my opinion known.
I'm not related to them either.
He is not condemning an agenda that seeks to destroy the state of Israel. It speaks for itself. She says that. Doesn't mean that she's personally an anti-Semite, even though I think she is. But either way, her actions, her advocacy is de facto anti-Israel, and as such, I would argue, anti-Semitic. And the fact that he doesn't want to come out and condemn that, and then he phrases it that we have something against her because of her ethnic background. Not only is he a coward for not coming out and criticizing her publicly for that, assuming he's also not anti-Israel, which I don't, but to add that smear on top of it is really a disgrace, and it's vicious. Let's talk about something else, David. What else is going on?
COVID-19's a big issue. Like in Michigan, we had the lowest case count in over a year, only like 150 cases. Restrictions are about to be completely removed. There might be flare-ups or variants, and so it's going to be interesting what happens.
What is happening on the street out there? I mean, are people taking off the mask?
There's a lot of masks out?
I mean, are people going into restaurants again? I mean, what's going on?
Yeah, so restaurants are reopening. I think you could even go indoors now. The local synagogues now have went back. I'm not sure if they got rid of social distancing, but you could now go into almost all of the local Orthodox, modern Orthodox synagogues without a mask and without, I think even without social distancing requirements as per the...
Are you going out on the street? Are people doing it? I mean, are people going into the restaurants now without the mask? Are they walking around? How many masks do you see now?
I was with President Trump, and I was disappointed in President Trump when he didn't follow through. That I was hoping social distancing would last after COVID-19. But
I'm asking quite a few masks.
There's a lot of stores that still have policies that masks are required. That now the government does not require stores to have mask requirement policies. But generally, the majority of stores do still have mask requirements. And people, maybe like, on the street, maybe like 25% of people are still wearing masks, and social distancing is still at some level effective, but less. And like I said, I would not mind if, I think social distancing is generally a good thing. Like people deserve our private space and germs. And like, I remember people always used to cough all over me.
I think that's a good thing too. I've never been comfortable like with tight crowds, and I don't think we need to go back to handshakes. To me, there's some benefit to protecting yourself from all sorts of germs. However, I think that in my neck of the woods, which is Boston, it's kind of a mixed thing. I see people without the mask in the store. I see clerks in the store without the mask. I've seen people in the restaurants without the mask, but I've also seen people still walking around with double masks outside alone. I think it has a lot to do with the individual's comfort level.
The store policy means they no longer enforcing a mask mandate, but some stores do still have the policy.
Some stores do. Most stores say it's optional, and they suggest that if you're vaccinated, you don't have to wear it. Of course, they can't ask that and shouldn't ask that because that's a personal question. But most businesses in Massachusetts have made it optional. I haven't seen anyone that still absolutely mandates it. I think that for good reason, places like hospitals and nursing homes mandated and should. But most regular businesses that are open to the public are not at this point. And I would say that they're coming down, the masks, that is. And I see less of it as time goes on and as people feel more confident. My own personal doctor at Mass General Hospital, who tends to think like I think, has said that she thinks that there's going to be a group of people, including her patients, who are never going to take off the mask and who are never going to fully emerge into society. They're always going to be, for the rest of their lives, going to be in a state of semi-isolation. And I think that unless you have a serious pre-existing condition, or you're over 80, then it seems to me that that's more psychological and maybe political than it is scientific. That's my opinion.
I mean, people should probably follow local case count numbers. So if you have comorbidities, even if you're fully vaccinated and the case count and infection rate is quite low, you probably should still keep social distance. But if the case count starts going up, we'll probably go back to mask. And we got 10 minutes left. We should talk about the G7 and Putin, Biden, and I would say that Putin probably won on almost all accounts, even though the U.S. media is trying to somehow portray it like Biden having the upper hand.
He's Biden, obviously. I mean, look, I don't want to get in trouble with YouTube, but it's obvious that he is dealing with an increasing level of dementia. He is, dementia is, and I can speak to this, my father had dementia. It is a progressive disease. It doesn't get better. It gradually gets worse and worse. And he does seem to be in intermediate stages of it at this point in his life. I think everyone knew that in a way.
Yeah, President Trump was on Fox News yesterday with Hannity. He said, it's not age, saying like there is a sizable, 10-20% of elderly people who get dementia, but it's not like dementia comes with age. It's still a minority of people who are elderly that get the dementia.
And there are many elderly who don't. In fact, I think most don't, but I think he does. And, I suppose it's sort of like Naftali Bennett to bring things back to Israel. He's not popular. Most people don't think he is fit to be prime minister, but they put him in there because they wanted to defeat Netanyahu. Need I say more? Anyway, David, I want to kind of wrap it up because I want to make sure that the show will download properly to Rumble and Gab and Minds and BitChute and all of these other people that carry the show now, but they tend to get finicky if I go on too long and it doesn't download. So share your thoughts. What are you up to in terms of broadcasting these days? What do you have coming up?
I'm interviewing actually later this afternoon a local senior Hare Krishna disciple who actually ran for Congress. Like he tried to run even against Gary Peters for Senate, but I mean, he wasn't successful. An interesting character. He's a professor of writing, but he's been, he became a Hare Krishna decades ago. And he is the one who convinced me to become a vegetarian when I went to the local ISKCON temple. He was one of the first people I spoke to. And we had tens of hours of conversations, mostly about the ethics of meat eating. So I'm going to be talking to, and we're part of, I included him. I was part of a local interfaith organization with actually a female rabbi in Detroit. And I ended up being able to include him in it. And then he became pretty prominent in interfaith, and he's in Lansing, the capital of Michigan. Mm-hmm. And he started his own interfaith network there. So I'm going to interview him on my channel in an hour at 3 about interfaith and cow protection as he advocates for not necessarily forcing everybody to be vegetarian, but just, generally the ethics or ideals behind vegetarianism or why. And honestly, when I became vegetarian, they really convinced me that it's probably not such a good idea to kill the cow. And a lot of rabbis agree with me, saying that, and I agree that Judaism has specific protections uniquely for the cow, because the cow is a benevolent animal that gives its milk to us and asks nothing in return. So, kosher says you just can't eat milk and meat together out of some respect for the cow, but the current state of mass slaughter, and we know in Europe, most Jews rarely had beef or meat.
Well,
your average person at most, even the Talmud talks about it, having meat on Sabbath.
We have much more of that today than
as opposed to current your average poor person eats beef 2 or 3 times. You could be homeless and poor and still eat beef 2 or 3 times a day. I'm largely in agreement about being against industrial slaughter.
I am too. I'm having on a Catholic priest who's just written a book about his own experiences with exorcism and the existence of demons in the world and their possession of people and how he's seen this.
Divic in Hebrew. Orthodox Jews or the sages agree that phenomenon is true and exists.
Yeah, and I have to tell you that I personally never really thought much about this until maybe in recent years when I've started to think I'm having some things going on. I'll be getting into that with the priest.
Are you going crazy or is it that there's these spirits around you? And if you aren't careful, I mean, in fact, I've been plugging your book sometimes in conversations related to topics about the nature of hatred or the nature of evil. In New Zealand, there's a debate on the nature of evil and I had a debate on the nature of hatred, and like we discussed that with your book, is that this added element that causes it, and to say, like, is it that we don't fight the Yetzer Hara, we don't fight the evil inclination, and these spirits that are always there, therefore enter it, and you know, certain way that you say, like, people are naturally good, and it's not that people do bad things, it's that people don't protect ourselves against these spirits entering us, and then the spirits enter us. And your book, you know, was just a pamphlet and wasn't able to get into these metaphysical topic, but I'll definitely be looking forward to that. And I did mention your book even a few times over the last few weeks.
I appreciate that.
My book is an important topic to understand, like what causes not just other people that you disagree with to do bad things, what causes me myself to do bad things and act in a different way. And if you're saying, well, maybe it's spirits, maybe.
Yeah, you know, well, that's the question. I'm starting to really actually have some, you know, things that make me think it is. And I'll get into that in my interview. And by the way, thank you for mentioning my book.
Yeah. I mean, traditionally, you're saying that's maybe what Jews believed, even metaphysically. Oh, yeah. What does it mean, the Yetzer Hara? Is the Yetzer Hara you, or is the Yetzer Hara an element that causes you to do bad things? That's not an essence. And obviously, if the body and limbs do bad things, it's us that did it. But was the cause of it me, or was the cause this exterior element that...
I think every religion in the world deals with this question, always has, and it doesn't absolve the individual of allowing something, an evil influence, not only to take over them, but then manifest itself in them. That is part of free will. So it's not like I'm saying you're free and clear, because this isn't, you do something evil and it's something outside.
It's, if the rabbi says 100% it was evil spirit to enter the person and cause him to do it, he still is legally accountable for the action. And that's not, might be less like the intent. To say a person who did a crime with intent has more punishment than someone who did a crime without intent.
No. The individual ultimately is responsible, because it's the individual who allows that evil spirit to the degree it happens.
Well, God forbid that. What about the case in France? Like you say with that, I mean, the Jewish community, big concern that guy who, you know, smoking marijuana or said spirits, that the French court let him off for, God forbid, killing that elderly Jewish woman.
And that was wrong.
Because they said it was a spirit that entered him.
He's responsible for his crime, and he let that spirit in, however it happened. Anyway, David, so we'll talk next week. And as always, I want to thank you for joining me.
Yeah, great. Thanks a lot.
All right. Take care.